Thank you for joining us. This broadcast has been made possible by the Lord and by the generous donations of brethren like you. If you would like to give a donation to help keep this broadcast on the air, please visit llgive.com. Thank you, and shalom. Welcome to Chapter and Verse. If this is the first time you've seen this program, welcome. We're glad you're here with us. If you watched our previous series, Messianic Apologetics, welcome back. In this new series, we will be discussing the topic of the fourth commandment, the Sabbath. Is the Sabbath still applicable to our lives today? Does the fourth commandment still stand? Or has it been done away with? Did Yeshua's death and resurrection somehow fulfill the Sabbath for us, so we don't need to observe it anymore? With this program, we hope to answer, to the best of our ability, these questions and more. So where should we start this discussion? Well, let's look at the scriptures. What do the scriptures actually tell us about Shabbat? What are the commands concerning Shabbat? How would we apply those commands to our 21st century lives? Should we at all? What are the instructions about Shabbat that aren't from Scripture, but that are man-made? To get this conversation started, let's go back to the beginning. When did Sabbath start? How did it start? What was its purpose? What was its function? Let's go to Genesis and see what we can learn about this topic. To get us started, we'll look at the creation story from Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 through 3 say, "Thus the heavens and the earth were completed, and all their hosts. By the seventh day, Elohim completed his work which he had done, and rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then Elohim blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which Elohim had created and made." So we see from Genesis chapter 2 the very first occurrence of this concept of Sabbath. Its intended purpose was to provide a day of the cessation of all creating, making, and doing. It would appear that Adonai is establishing a pattern here, one that might serve as a point of reference for us. This very first time the Sabbath is mentioned in Scripture, it's worded in a way that doesn't inherently expect obedience. It's not recorded as a command, but rather is presented as something else entirely. In fact, while it's clear that Adonai himself participates in resting on the Sabbath, there's no record that he required Adam and Eve to rest the way that he did. This presents a curious situation for us. Interestingly, the Sabbath isn't mentioned again in the entire rest of the book of Genesis. There's no indication, scripturally speaking, that Abraham, Yitzhak, or Yaakov kept the Sabbath. Of course, we would assume that they did, potentially, but I'm just pointing out here that there was no recorded instruction for them to do so contained within the biblical account of Genesis. There is the statement in Genesis chapter 26, verse 5, where Adonai tells Yitzhak that Avraham obeyed me and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. That statement says that Avraham kept Adonai's mishmeret, his mitzvot, his chukot, and his torot. Those are the four different classifications of instruction, of commands. These are all found within the Torah, among which the commands of keeping the Shabbat are found. Likewise, in Genesis chapter 6, Noah somehow just inherently knows the difference between clean and unclean animals, despite the fact that his life preceded the instructions that outline what was clean and what was unclean. One might suggest that when Adonai tells Yitzhak in Genesis chapter 26, verse 5, that his father obeyed all his commands and instructions, that this is an indication that Abraham also kept the instruction of honoring the Sabbath. But arriving at this outcome would be a conclusion from inference, not one from direct evidence, which is never a good way to exegete the scriptures. Fast forwarding from Genesis chapter 26, verse 5, then, the next reference to Shabbat is found in Exodus chapter 16. This takes place after Yaakov settles in Egypt, after he dies, and after several generations pass. In fact, by this point, nearly 400 years of time have passed by. Now, as we know from the Exodus story, the descendants of Yaakov, who had settled in the land of Egypt, are led out of slavery in that land by Adonai, and they begin their journey in the wilderness. while we might suggest that these generations honored Shabbat, there's once again no scriptural documentation to support that conclusion. Now, before you start reacting with indignation, thinking that we are somehow laying the groundwork for stating that Sabbath is done away with in some fashion, I can firmly and with conviction deny that charge. I love honoring the Sabbath, and it's a mainstay of this ministry. But if we're going to approach this topic from an intellectually honest position, we must be prepared to see where flaws in our logic might potentially be pointed out. In this scenario, we're simply illustrating for your consideration that prior to this next passage of Scripture that we are about to read from Exodus chapter 16, there is no command, nor is there any definitive indication that Adonai expected mankind to honor the Sabbath the way that he himself did in Genesis chapter 2. I am personally of the belief that all those generations prior to the Exodus did honor Shabbat, but I cannot prove it from the Scriptures. Whether we adamantly hold to that point of view or not, we need to be realistic with ourselves and admit this fact. Scripture does not speak to this topic directly prior to Exodus chapter 16. But that brings us to the events that take place in the Exodus story. It's at this point in the biblical narrative, during the Exodus from Egypt, that Adonai miraculously causes manna to appear. Exodus chapter 16, verses 22 through 30 say, in regards to this manna, now on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for each one. When all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moshe, then he said to them, this is what Adonai meant. Tomorrow is a Sabbath observance, a holy Shabbat to Adonai. Bake what you will bake, and boil what you will boil, and all that is left over, put aside to be kept until morning. So they put it aside until morning, as Moshe had ordered, and it did not become foul, nor was there any worm in it. Moshe said, eat it today, for today is a Shabbat to Adonai. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, the Shabbat, there will be none. It came about on the seventh day that some of the people went out together, but they found none. Then Adonai said to Moshe, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my instructions? See, Adonai has given you the Shabbat, therefore he gives you bread for 2 days on the sixth day. Remain every man in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. Now, there's a whole lot to unpack here. Let's start with this. On the sixth day of the week, Friday, the children of Israel were instructed that the following day was to be a Sabbath observance, a holy Shabbat to Adonai. This identifies the seventh day as unique among all the days. It is the first day that is identified in Scripture as being Kadosh la Adonai, holy to Adonai. This should communicate to us that the seventh day is pretty special to him. One thing that is interesting to note here, right on the heels of identifying the seventh day as holy to Adonai, the people were given the instruction to bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil. We'll come back to this point later on, but keep it in mind for future reference. Next, we see the proclamation that Hayom ki Shabbat Hayom le Yod Heh Vav Heh. Literally, it means this day, which is Shabbat, this day to Adonai. Now, it's translated as, today is a Shabbat to Adonai. Today you will not find it, you won't find the manna, in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, the Shabbat, there will be none. So, does this mean that we are to abstain from eating on Shabbat? Of course not. It means that we are to cease from our normal pursuit of the mundane on Shabbat. Gathering manna was a chore that was necessary 6 days a week. If you didn't gather on those days, you went hungry. More to the point, if you felt like you didn't want to go out and collect the manna first thing in the morning, you couldn't eat yesterday's leftovers. Anything left over from the day before would have rotted overnight. But on Shabbat, we're told not to gather any manna. In fact, Adonai took this so seriously that he didn't even provide manna on Shabbat. This way, no one would be tempted to gather it on the Sabbath in disobedience to his instruction. He was so serious about that instruction, about not working on Shabbat, that he went so far as to remove even the temptation to do so from the Hebrews. And yet, ironically, that's exactly what we see happen. It says, it came about on the seventh day that some of the people went out to gather, but they found none. This is a sad statement. We may receive direct instruction from Adonai, yet our inclination is still to serve our own desires and follow our own paths rather than to submit ourselves to His instructions if they don't fit our paradigm of what life should be like. How often we do this. He tells us to do or to not do something, but either out of habit or out of preference or sometimes, honestly, out of rebellion, we just tend to allow our flesh and our own thoughts to take precedence and authority over what He has told us. Trading it must have been for Him at times to look at us and say, I told you not to do that. Why won't you just listen? In fact, that's exactly what takes place next. It says in verse 28, Then Adonai said to Moshe, How long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my instructions? I think any of us who are parents can completely identify with this. Like those times when we turn to our children who have repeatedly disobeyed despite multiple warnings and say something like, How many times have I told you? And in even a funnier fashion, Adonai then asks this of Moshe, almost like one parent talking to another, Do you see what your children did? And then in true parental style, Adonai says to everyone, Go to your room and think about what you've done. It says here in verse 29, See, Adonai has given you the Shabbat. Therefore, He gives you bread for 2 days on the sixth day. Remain every man in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. In other words, I told you not to go out looking for food, and I meant it. Stay in your tent. Now, this had a direct, literal application and meaning at that time. But we will flesh this out a little bit more later on. For now, let's continue looking at the other scriptures that speak about the Shabbat. Then we'll come back and break some of them down and examine what they might mean for us. Four chapters after the story of the manna happens, where Adonai institutes the keeping of Shabbat in Exodus chapter 16, we see this instruction in Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 through 11. Remember the Shabbat to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Shabbat of Adonai your Elohim. In it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male or your female servant, or your cattle or your sojourner who stays with you. For in 6 days Adonai made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore Adonai blessed the Shabbat and made it holy. This was, of course, the fourth of what we refer to as the Ten Commandments. Seemingly, the Shabbat is so important to our king that he made it part of his most important list of instructions that we are to keep, and he spoke them directly to us from Mount Sinai. This is where we can finally tie the commands of keeping Sabbath holy back to the creation account in Genesis. It is here that Adonai provides the justification for his instruction by pointing out that I am not asking you to do something that I haven't already done. Remember back when I created everything? I took a rest on the seventh day. You should do the same. As we move forward through the scriptures, the next time we see Shabbat mentioned is in Exodus chapter 31. In verses 12 through 17, it says, Adonai spoke to Moshe, saying, But as for you, speak to the sons of Israel, saying, You shall surely observe my Sabbaths. For this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am Adonai who sanctifies you. Therefore you are to observe Shabbat, for it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. For whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people. For 6 days work may be done, but on the seventh day there is a Shabbat of complete rest, holy to Adonai. Whoever does any work on Shabbat shall surely be put to death. So the sons of Israel shall observe Shabbat, to celebrate Shabbat throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the sons of Israel forever, for in 6 days Adonai made the heaven and the earth. But on the seventh day he ceased from labor and was refreshed. Okay, so there's a lot in those six verses that we need to discuss. The first thing we should notice in verse 13 is that Adonai calls the Sabbaths his. This should immediately communicate to us how important they are. They're his Sabbaths, not ours. When he tells you, you shall surely observe them, we should probably take his words pretty seriously. Obviously, this is something that's very important to him. Second, he also identifies the Shabbat as a sign. If we think about it, this statement should make perfect sense to us. Those of us who honor the Sabbath as a day of rest on which we do no work are distinctly different from the world around us. We do things differently than the way the rest of the world operates. As the society around us continues in the whirlwind of business that consumes their lives, we cease from our labors, we pause, and we take a rest. This makes us unique and causes us to stand out as distinct from the rest of the world. This is a sign that we serve a different king than the rest of the world does. Third point, he says this is something that is to be done throughout your generations. This implies that there is to be no end to this instruction. In fact, we'll look a little later at the significance that Shabbat means as a sign of what is to come. Were you aware that keeping Shabbat is a picture of the fulfillment of prophecy? It is, and we'll see that as we investigate further. Our final note of interest from verse 13, Adonai says about Shabbat, that you may know that I am Adonai who sanctifies you. This is an interesting statement. Would we not know that he sanctifies us if there was no Shabbat? Of course we would still know that, but does keeping Shabbat remind us each week that we are sanctified unto his purposes and created for his glory? Yes. Thus, the keeping of Shabbat does serve as a weekly reminder that he is the one who sanctifies us unto his purposes. This fact should cause us to strongly consider that our keeping of Shabbat serves a much greater purpose than simply resting from work. Just in verse 13 alone, Adonai says, 1, Shabbat is his. 2, Shabbat is a sign. 3, Shabbat is to be kept forever. And 4, that Adonai uses Shabbat as part of his process to sanctify us. What an amazing thing Shabbat is! Now, if that were all that he said about Shabbat, it would be enough. But there's plenty more where that came from. Verse 14 goes on to say that Shabbat is holy to us. That means that every seventh day, every Shabbat, is special, dedicated, unique. It's unlike all the other days. It's holy to us. We could talk about this alone for the next hour. But the main point here is that Shabbat is unique, and we should treat it as such. Just as we start feeling all warm and fuzzy inside about how he's given us a day that's unique and special, and that we get to participate in that unique event every seventh day, he then drops the hammer. Verse 14 goes on to say that whoever doesn't maintain the holiness of Shabbat is worthy of death. Uh-oh. Wow, this is no joking matter. This is how serious Adonai considers this day to be. In the same way that my wedding band is the sign that others can see of my commitment to my wife, Shabbat is the sign that others can see of our commitment to Adonai. When we profane his Shabbat, it's comparable to the scenario where if I took off my wedding band and went to the singles bar to look for a date. Profaning his Shabbat is almost like we're cheating on him. In the same way that my wife would rightly consider my actions of removing my ring to be unfaithfulness in that scenario, Adonai considers our profaning his Sabbath as unfaithfulness to him. We would be well advised to heed his words and to keep his day holy. If I truly love my wife, I would never even consider being unfaithful to her. If that's my attitude toward my wife, how much more so should I be painstakingly faithful to the one who created my wife for me? Keeping his Shabbat holy, unique, and special is the way that we express our faithfulness to him. As we examine verse 15, we see some other key indicators of just how special this day is to Adonai. For 6 days, work may be done, but on the seventh day, there is a Shabbat of complete rest. That's how the verse here reads in English. In the Hebrew, however, there's something very interesting that's said. It repeats the word Shabbat 3 times in 3 different forms. It says, Hashvi'i Shabbat Shabbaton. In other words, Adonai is saying the seventh day is a Shabbat, Shabbat, all Shabbat. This repetition of the word Shabbat in 3 different forms communicates to us that this seventh day is incredibly important, and when he says to rest, he means it. This statement is followed by another admonition that whoever works on Shabbat is to be put to death. In other words, there's no wiggle room on this one. Rest means rest. No work means no work. Now, we'll look into that and what that means in a little more detail in a few minutes. But back to this passage. In verse 16, we see another repetition, where it says, to celebrate Shabbat throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. Like what we saw in verse 13, Shabbat is mentioned here in verse 16 as something that is to be observed throughout generations. But here in verse 16, something unique and new is added. It's described as a perpetual covenant. The use of the word perpetual reinforces and doubles down on the concept that the phrase throughout their generations spoken in verse 13 implies that it's to go on forever, without ceasing. Additionally, a covenant is an agreement between two parties. A perpetual covenant would mean that there's no end to it, but that as long as both parties exist, so would this agreement exist. Pretty safe to say that both Israel and Adonai still exist to this day, thousands of years after this agreement was struck. So then, it would also be pretty safe to conclude that this is still a binding agreement. As we reach the final verse, verse 17, we see yet another repetition. Just as verse 13 describes Shabbat as a sign between Israel and Adonai, so too does verse 17. It is a sign between me and the sons of Israel forever. Yet another confirmation that there is no end to this agreement. Throughout their generations is used twice. Perpetual covenant is used once, and forever is used once. If any of us were to witness two people talking, and they both used phrases like perpetual and forever in their conversation, wouldn't you think that those of us listening to that conversation would understand pretty clearly that these people who were talking were pretty serious and committed to whatever topic of conversation they were talking about? In the same way, Adonai is serious and committed to the Sabbath being a sign of our perpetual covenant with him. Finally, the last phrase in verse 17 repeats what is stated in verse 15 about the days of the week. For in 6 days Adonai made the heaven and the earth, but on the seventh day he ceased from labor and was refreshed. When Adonai repeats himself, it's not because he's absent-minded. He doesn't have Alzheimer's, nor does he have dementia. He doesn't need to repeat himself because he thinks he needs to, or because he just likes the sound of his own voice. When we see occasions in Scripture where it looks like he's repeating himself, it's for one reason, because we don't listen too well. It's not that he's redundant. It's because we need constant reinforcement. He's repeating himself for our benefit, so that we understand, without any doubt, that he means what he said, and that he's serious about this, and that we should take it seriously as well. Okay, so now that we've finally covered Exodus chapter 31, let's move on to some other verses about Shabbat. The next time Shabbat is mentioned in Scripture is in Exodus chapter 35. It says there, "For 6 days work may be done, but on the seventh day you shall have a holy day, a Shabbat of complete rest to Adonai. Whoever does any work on it shall be put to death. You shall not kindle a fire in any of your dwellings on Shabbat." Now, what appears in our English version as, "You shall have a holy day, a Shabbat of complete rest," in Hebrew it reads, "Yiyeh lakem kodesh Shabbat Shabbaton." Literally, that means, "Have to," or "have for yourselves, holy Shabbat Shabbats." Just like in chapter 31, verse 15, the repetition of the word Shabbat is conveying to us that we are to take this very seriously. And when he says we are to rest, he's not kidding. He means it. Now, what comes next is yet another repetition of something we've already seen. But it comes within a specific contextual situation. It says, "Whoever does any work on it shall be put to death." We already made note of the seriousness of Shabbat in chapter 31, where it uses this same phrase. But there, it's only mentioned in reference to doing work. In contrast to, and in addition to what is said in chapter 31, this time, where it says this in chapter 35, there's further detail given. Immediately after repeating this phrase about facing the death penalty for doing any work, it says that you shall not kindle a fire. So what does this mean when he says, "You shall not kindle a fire"? This instruction was given to a group of people who were living in tents, temporary structures. They were exposed to the elements with only light, flimsy, portable shelters. These dwellings would have been greatly affected by changes in weather. Wintertime, as well as nighttime in the desert, could be quite chilly. That begins the question then. Does Adonai expect us to sit in the dark and in the cold on Shabbat? On all other days, we can enjoy the warmth and the light of the fire, but on Shabbat, we're supposed to sit in cold darkness? Of course, this isn't the case. But hold on to that thought, as we're going to come back to it later, where this verse will become very pertinent. As we progress through the scriptures, our next verse that mentions Shabbat is in Leviticus chapter 23. Of course, Leviticus 23 is the famous feasts chapter, in which all the festivals of Adonai are laid out for us to follow. But chapter 23 starts off like this. Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, Adonai's appointed times, which you shall proclaim as holy convocations, my appointed times are these. For 6 days work may be done, but on the seventh day there is a Shabbat of complete rest, a holy convocation. You shall not do any work. It is a Shabbat to Adonai in all your dwellings. Did you catch that? There was a phrase used twice, once in verse 2 and once again in verse 3, to describe the seventh day of the week. That phrase, in English, was holy convocation. In the Hebrew, it's the phrase Mikra Kodesh. Prior to Leviticus chapter 23, that phrase is only used in one verse in all the rest of the Torah prior to that, Exodus chapter 12, verse 16. In that verse, it's used twice, both times in reference to the rest days of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the first and the last days of Unleavened Bread. But here in Leviticus chapter 23, that phrase is used 10 times, twice in reference to Shabbat. In fact, verses 7 and 8 repeat what Exodus chapter 12, verse 16 said, that the first and the last days of unleavened bread are to be Mikra Kodeshim, holy convocations. How interesting, though, that of the 10 times this phrase is used in Leviticus chapter 23, the first two are in regards to Shabbat. This should communicate to us that Adonai considers Shabbat to be one of his festivals, one of his Moedim, his appointed times. Shabbat is the first feast, and it's preeminent among all the other feast days that he tells us about. Clearly, this is a topic that's important to him. Anything important to him should be important to us. While Leviticus chapter 23 is a fascinating chapter all in and of itself, and certainly worthy of further study, if we want to stick to the topic of Shabbat, we need to move on to the next verses in which Shabbat is mentioned. This occurs in Numbers chapter 15, which starts off with a very interesting context, one that we looked at briefly twice already. Typically, this next portion of scripture is taken on its own merits and looked at outside of the surrounding context. But I would like for us to examine that context. In this chapter, verses 32 through 41 tell the story of a man who goes out and gathers wood on Shabbat and is sentenced to death for it. On the surface, this seems to be cruel and unusual punishment. But when read within the context of the previous verses, it starts to make more sense. So let's take a look at that context. To gain the proper perspective on the context of what takes place in verses 32 through 41, we need to back up to verse 29. To be fair, verses 29 through 31 are in regards to offerings being brought into the tabernacle. But I personally believe the story we're given in the following verses of verses 32 through 36 are intentionally placed there after the statements made in verses 29 through 31. Numbers chapter 15, verses 29 through 36 read as follows. You shall have one law for him who does anything unintentionally, for him who is native among the sons of Israel, and for the alien who sojourns among them. But the person who does anything defiantly, whether he is native or alien, that one is blaspheming Adonai, and that person shall be cut off from among his people, because he has despised the word of Adonai and has broken his commandment. That person shall be completely cut off. His guilt will be on him. I believe what we just heard in verses 29 through 31 is a preamble for what we are about to read in the next several verses. Picking back up at verse 32, it says, Now while the sons of Israel were in the wilderness, they found a man gathering wood on the Shabbat. Those who found him gathering wood brought him to Moshe and to all the congregation, and they put him in custody because it had not been declared what should be done to him. Then Adonai said to Moshe, The man shall surely be put to death. All the congregation shall stone him with stones outside the camp. So all the congregation brought him outside the camp and stoned him to death with stones, just as Adonai had commanded Moshe. Now, initially, this sounds quite harsh and even shocking. Someone is killed? And killed in brutal fashion for picking up sticks? In fact, this is one of those verses that people love to point out when they're attempting to make the argument that the law is done away with, claiming that the God of the Old Testament was a cruel, mean God, but that Jesus is the God of love. When people make that argument, however, it just goes to show, unfortunately, that they have no idea what the context of this verse is stating. We have just read numerous verses that were all announced to Israel, not only by the voice and instruction of Moshe to all the people, but some also by the very voice of Adonai speaking from Mount Sinai to the people. In no uncertain terms, Adonai makes it clear that Shabbat is to be honored, respected, treated as special, and set apart. It is a day on which no work is to be done, a day on which everyone is to remain in their places, and a day on which no fire is to be kindled. Then we're told that the same instructions apply equally to everyone, regardless of their status within the nation of Israel. The same laws apply to both the native-born and the foreigner. Additionally, there is no measure or remedy for someone who defiantly breaks the instructions of Adonai. This then plays a huge factor in the story of the man gathering sticks on Shabbat. You see, this man who was found gathering sticks on Shabbat, being summarily stoned to death, is not an example of some mean, cruel God who demands perfect obedience and offers no mercy. This is not an example of how impossible it is to keep the instructions of the Torah. Quite the contrary, this is an example of willful defiance to Adonai and to his expressed will. As already mentioned, this man was present at the foot of Mount Sinai when Adonai spoke from the mountain, when he said that no one was to do any work on Shabbat. This man was also present when Moshe instructed the entire assembly in regards to every man remaining in his place on Shabbat, as well as the instruction to avoid kindling a fire on Shabbat. But wait, wasn't this man just trying to keep his fire going to stay warm? What if he was just trying to keep his wife and children safe from the harsh cold? It just shows how heartless and cruel that God of yours is. Or so goes the typical emotion-based argument that ignores the context anyway. First, there's no mention of what time of year it was. It very well could have been summer when this took place. Was he gathering sticks to keep warm in the summer? We don't know what time of year it was. Was he just trying to keep his wife and kids warm? Think of the poor, helpless children. We don't see any mention of a family here either. Rather than attempting to make an argument from silence, that is, to read things into the text that aren't there, let's work with what is there. Without backing up to verse 29, it's easy to misunderstand the situation that's going on in verses 32 through 36. But the suggestion here, given the context, is that this man was willfully, defiantly breaking multiple commands regarding Shabbat. The indication, given the context, is that this man was gathering firewood specifically for the purpose of working on Shabbat, the type of work that required kindling a fire. Specifically, the type of work that required his fire to consume more than the normal amount of fuel, thus forcing him out of his tent and into the countryside to gather more firewood. Perhaps he was a blacksmith. We don't know. If it was simply a matter of a person failing to prepare the day before Shabbat and gather all his wood necessary on that day, do we really think the people would have reacted the way they did? Because when his fellow Israelites found this man gathering firewood, they didn't assume that he was just trying to stave off cold. So why would we? They instantly knew he was doing something wrong, and they reacted by incarcerating him. Clearly, there was something about his behavior that stood out and communicated to his fellows that he was doing something out of the ordinary. These people knew inherently that this man was doing something he shouldn't have been. This should be our first indicator. Additionally, we've already seen from Exodus chapter 16 that those who went out on Shabbat to gather manna weren't punished. They weren't put in custody. They weren't stoned. They were simply reprimanded. So this wasn't simply about the act of gathering something on Shabbat. No, there was something far more serious going on here. The command we have heard repeated from Exodus chapter 31, verses 14 and 15, Exodus chapter 35, verses 2 and 3, about working on Shabbat, which was strictly forbidden, was to be met with a death penalty. The fact that this man's fellows took this man into custody and that he was sentenced to death strongly suggests that he was doing something that was clearly considered to be work. He wasn't simply attempting to stave off cold, either for himself or for others. The clues were given by the context strongly suggest that this man was acting in willful defiance, that he was intentionally working on Shabbat despite the repeated instructions to the contrary. But still, why was he sentenced with the death penalty? Why such a stringent, inflexible, unwavering, black and white, line in the sand, scorched earth approach to this man's sin? It's due to the nature of the sin. The sin this man committed was willful. It was intentional. And it was defiant. That type of behavior, that type of outright in-your-face, snubbing one's nose at authority type of rebellion would be sure to infect everyone around him if left unchecked. That is why it was met with such severe repercussions. If, by the example of the one, the many are saved from committing the same wanton act, then an example was required. If, on the other hand, no example was made of this man, then the fostering of disregard for Adonai and his instructions, rebellion against him and his representatives, and ultimate destruction would be the end result. If, by the one, however, the many can be saved from such a fate, then we can begin to understand the consequences of this man's actions. It's unfortunate, and it's a sad statement about our tendencies and our desire to rush to sin, but the lesson is learned. Down to this very day, the children of Israel have gone to great lengths to avoid working on Shabbat, partially due to this very passage of Scripture. So while these circumstances seem unfair, this example has set the tone for the nation of Israel and kept her out of much potential pain and suffering. This same principle should apply to our lives. We, like the people who saw this man acting in defiant rebellion, should be quick to seize the desires of our flesh and to cast them out from among the members of our body. As Paul put it in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 5, we should take every thought captive to the obedience of Messiah. And on that note, we conclude the first session in the Shabbat discussion series. Thank you for joining us today for episode 1. We'll see you next time for episode 2, as we continue to dig into what the scriptures have to say about the topic of Shabbat. Shalom.